I met up with Nathan Dennys of the Greater Hamden Heritage Alliance. We began the tour at a spot overlooking the Jones Falls.
Tell me a little bit about where we are right now.
Well, this is the site of Mill Number 1, which was at the heart of textile production in Hamden Woodbury. Before 1840s, this was a flouring mill, and it was acquired by Horatio Gambrill and David Carroll and converted to cotton production in the 1840s. And Gambrill and Carroll were converting mills all along the Jones Falls to cotton production at this time. And this was mainly because the flouring mills were failing in Baltimore due to, in the early 1800s, the War of 1812 put a dent in flouring exports and also on imports of textile products. So people needed textile products made locally, and so they found a niche here with production along the Jones Falls. And so by the 1840s, Gambrill and Carroll were here establishing their workforce. They were recruiting hundreds of people from the Appalachian region to work here, and at the same time they were converting the mill, they were also developing Stone Hill as houses for the workers. And they employed entire families in the mills, from the little kids to mom and dad. It was really a family operation for all the families living here, at least most of them.
So this was really like a little mini factory town, not really part of Baltimore City per se, but just sort of on its own, kind of its own little universe.
Yeah, it was until the end of the 19th century, it was a company town, and there were about seven of them in Hamden Woodbury, and Stone Hill is perhaps the most intact of all of them, and one of the most intact urban mill villages in the United States. You really get a sense of the paternalistic design that the mill owners were going for. You have these condensed residences in the mill owner house on top of the hill overlooking everything, and then a supervisor house in there as well. And there's also a general store too, so people had no reason to leave Stone Hill, and they actually couldn't afford to. And this is definitely the off the beaten path tour. It's the most adventurous of them. We're going to be going down to, in a moment, Round Falls. There's a beautiful vista that not a lot of people know about, and it's actually really difficult to get down to, but we're going to go down there anyway.
I wore my walking shoes.
Great.
We walk around the outside of the mill complex and head into the wooded area along the side of Clipper Mill Road. A path leads to a platform that was built by Bill Strever and Ted Rouse, the developers of Clipper Mill in Woodbury and some friends, as a sort of volunteer DIY project in 2001. The structures have fallen into disrepair in recent years, but the Greater Hamden Heritage Alliance and others hope to raise funds to rebuild soon.
I had no idea that this was here.
Yeah, the dam here is beautiful, and it dates back to the early 1800s at least, where it served a flouring mill that was located just downstream. And the flouring mill was called Rock Mill and was demolished in the 1930s for what the city called flood control. And it still exists today. And in the 1800s, it was actually a popular spot for local artists to come and paint. There was a two-volume book called Picturesque America that was written by the Romantic poet William Cullen Bryant, and it includes an engraving of the dam here and with a beautiful description of the Jones Falls and Jordale Park. But over time, as the Jones Falls became more and more Baltimore sewer, people stopped coming down here.
We leave Round Falls and head towards the old Steve Silver building, which is located at the top of the hill near the Keswick Road-Wyman Park Drive entrance to Druid Hill Park. The path takes you along the steep switchbacks of the Jones Falls Trail, a popular route for hikers and bikers for both recreation and commuting into downtown. With a canopy of trees in Druid Hill Park above and the steady flow of the Jones Falls below, it's hard to believe you're in the middle of the city. At the same time, you can understand how this natural barrier between Stone Hill and the city added a sense of isolation to the area over the years and staved off development for good and bad. At the top of the hill, we enter the parking lot at 800 Wyman Park Drive.
Okay, we're at Steve Silver now, and this building was built in around 1924 when Steve was looking for a new factory to expand their production. And within 5 years, they added a second floor. It was originally a one-story building. And there's a great story as to how they decided to land on this spot. Apparently, the owner was with his soon-to-be wife in Jordale Park, and they were looking down at this piece of land, and his wife said, well, that looks like a great place for a factory. And it turned out to be a very astute observation, too, because at that time, the Mount Vernon Mill Company was selling off all of its property in the neighborhood, so they probably got a great deal on it. And Steve was a luxury, high-end silver maker. They produced silver that went to the White House. The Eisenhower administration took silver here to give to dignitaries that came through, and they actually had silver in the White House.
And this was an active, this was Steve Silver until not too long ago. Is it the recent past, right?
It was the recent past. Steve was acquired by Lennox in 1990, and the factory closed down in 1999.
Situated behind the Steve Silver building is a cluster of homes that are the original residences of Stonehill. Most are modest-sized stone duplexes with simple construction, but one house stands out from the rest.
So Stonehill is a beautiful and unique mill village. The buildings here are so beautiful, made from locally quarried stone along the Jones Falls. And most of these buildings here were built in 1845. But the building we're going to now was built long before that. It was Elisha Tyson's summer house. And Elisha Tyson is best known as an abolitionist and a self-made millionaire. And he established an early flouring mill in Woodbury, near where the light rail stop is today. And now his summer house has been beautifully restored by Mark Thistle, who we're going to go meet in a minute.
At first glance, the home looks a lot like the others surrounding it, but there are some important differences. For one thing, it's a lot bigger. The home's owner, Mark Thistle, is an enthusiastic caretaker of both Elisha Tyson's home and his legacy.
Well, it's 200 years old. There aren't a lot of 200-year-old houses here in Hamden, or in the city for that matter, but it was built by Elisha Tyson as a summer home to overlook his flour mill. But if you were a person of means in 1811, which we believe is when this house was built, you had a house in the country because you wanted to be anywhere but in the city during the pestilential summers in Baltimore, where literally thousands of people would die of yellow fever and other, you know, malaria-like diseases. And he actually spent, Elisha Tyson spent a great deal of his efforts as a person in semi-retirement and a wealthy man trying to find a cure for yellow fever. It did claim many members of his own family, despite the fact that he carted them all out here. And we just don't appreciate how big a deal that was. Elisha Tyson is a name that we really should know in the way that we know Johns Hopkins or Enoch Pratt. But the reason we don't know his name is because in true dedicated Quaker fashion, he refused to put his name or allow his name to be put on any of his bequests, any of his labors. When Elisha Tyson built this house, there was nothing really here. This was the first wave of industrial development, a series of flour mills along the Jones Falls. And this may be the first house, you know, in this area. There was, it's certainly one of the oldest surviving houses here. Yeah. If there is an older house, it's undocumented as such.
Yes.
This is the oldest documented house in North Baltimore, short of Homewood. Homewood was built in 1804 by the Carroll family, a much grander estate than this, 10 times the cost, actually. This cost about $3,000 to build, which is still a hefty sum in 18... It was built between 1804 and 1811.
So is this house built in the same manner as the ones that came after, or is it a little bit different?
Well, this is an older house built to a more Federalist style and for a wealthier person. So if you look carefully, all these houses look similar, but in fact, this one is very different. The windows are big. Windows were the most expensive part of any structure. This porch, this is not a mill worker's porch. But, I mean, these things, these architectural elements on this house, the marble lintels and things like that, you don't do that for middle management. This house came down through history as the mill manager's home. That's because that was its second iteration. Because these houses were built upon Elisha Tyson's death in 1824, some decade and a half later or so, the flour mill was replaced by a textile mill financed by the Carroll family. And the Carroll family bought this house, its surrounding land, and built the houses for their mill workers and made this house the supervisor's home. But this house was also, it found roles as a commercial building that were not antithetical to Tyson. At one point, it served as a dormitory for unattached female mill workers, 17 of whom lived here at one time. And it was a safe place for them. I don't know how long it lasted in that capacity. There's a great deal about the house's history that we just don't know. In fact, the vast majority of it we do not know.
We depart the Tyson House and head down a narrow, curvy lane that winds back down into the Falls Valley, then back uphill towards another cluster of mill buildings on the left.
So we're passing by mill numbers 2 and 3, which were additions to mill number 1, and they were built in the 1850s and 1870s. And the mills really reached their peak in the 1890s. And then after World War I, they started to decline. In 1923, there was a major strike at the mills. About 1,000 textile workers went on strike because the mills increased hours by 6 and didn't give a pay increase, or a very little pay increase. And so the workers went on strike and in the spring of that year, and by the end of summer, they were so broke that they just gave up. And also, because the mills owned the homes, they were also kicking strikers out. And actually, at the end of the strike, Mount Vernon Mill Company started moving operations to the south where labor was cheaper. And that was when they started selling most of their property. When the mills closed down, they were replaced with softer industries. Mill number 1 was acquired by Lifelike Products, which made model trains. And Lifelike Products found that the styrofoam that they were using to make the hills also made really great ice boxes. So they were making ice boxes as well. And the soft industries didn't last very long. And at the time, Hamden Woodbury was struggling because its main industry had disappeared, so a lot of people were out of work. And it wasn't until recently that the neighborhood has been restored. Starting with mill number 2 right there, which is the mill center, which began in the 1980s. And now we have Clipper Mill and mill number 1, and soon Whitehall Mill, which is currently a pornography warehouse that's in disrepair, will now be a mixed-use residential area.
We stroll past the mills and into the surrounding neighborhood. Everywhere there's activity. People working on houses, planting gardens, the sound of ongoing construction, a sense of progress. At the top of the hill is the last stop on our tour, the Crittenden Mansion.
And so we're approaching what was David Carroll's mansion, this big plantation-style mansion from which he could oversee his domain, way up on the hill above Stone Hill. This was built in 1845 at the same time as Stone Hill. And it is currently being developed into apartments in the mansion, and the developer is also building townhouses along the side of the property too, and demolishing these dormitories, which were constructed by the Florence Crittenden Mansion much later. It's a beautiful building, and you know it's amazing that it's still here. And we wanted to include it on the tour, even though it's going to be a construction site, because it's such an important piece of the Stone Hill. It's so important that this exists, because you come up here and you get a sense that from here, Carroll could oversee his domain, and the people living in Stone Hill or working in the mills could look up and see this mansion on top of the hill and know that at any time the boss could be watching.
As we stand gazing down at the Mill Valley from the commanding view from the Crittenden House lawn, I'm struck by how the past and the present meld together here, how city living really is about layers and layers of lives and generations all sharing the same space in turn.
It's fascinating to think about the beginnings of a place and just how it evolves through time. And you can see it so clearly here with the different eras of construction on top of each other.
And that's one of the amazing things about Stonehill, and you know, something that we try is to preserve not only the buildings but the built environment. We want Stonehill to maintain that feeling of the past and that identity.
Nathan Denny's of the Greater Hamden Heritage Alliance. The Stonehill Passage is just one of 5 walking tours of Greater Hamden. You can discover Hamden's industrial past with the help of detailed brochures featuring maps, historic sites and landmarks, photographs, and directions for the self-guided tours. The brochures are designed by Paula Boggart and available at local shops in Hamden. And you can find information about the Greater Hamden Heritage Alliance online at baltimoreheritage.org/HamdenAlliance. For The Signal, I'm Lisa Morgan.